Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
This is Jennifer Hellman on air, and tonight we have a woman who I actually got a request to have her on our show, and it's an honor and a pleasure to have her on our show because she happens to be a friend as well. Her name is Peggy Porter. Peggy is an intuitive who has had many, many near-death experiences, and this has changed her perspective on the afterlife and spirit communication. I'm getting chills just thinking about all the experience that she's going to share with us today. She also has a lot of knowledge on magic and rituals, and we'll try and get into that, but she's also going to be open for questions, and I'll give you that number in a few minutes, as well as information on how you can contact her for your own personal reading with this wonderful woman. So right now, I would like to introduce and welcome Peggy Porter to air. Thank you for being on the show today, Peggy.
Thank you so much, Jen, for having me today. Thank you for allowing me to share my story and my journey with you and with the people on the air.
You're amazing. So let's just get started because it started young and it just continues to be wonderful and expansive for you. So why don't you get started and let us know about what happened to you.
Well, when I first heard, when you first invited me on the show, I thought, what in the world am I going to talk about, you know, and what could I possibly say that the audience hasn't already heard before and probably heard in a more eloquent way than I could ever put it. But so I decided and just let spirit be my guide, and as I did, I kept hearing, just tell your story. Just tell them who you are and tell them where you came from and your truth. So I'm starting this and prefacing this by saying that this is my truth, this is my journey, and this is my path. And I hope that something that I say to you will resonate deep within your own soul and your own spirit and take away that which will benefit you and throw away the rest. But this is what I have come to know is my truth. And it started at the age of 5. If you can't tell by the accent, I come from the Deep South, from the Bible Belt, and I grew up in Louisiana on a farm. And on March 19th, a windy spring day on that farm, I came home from church, and I had on my little fancy dress, you know, with all the petticoats under and everything. But my older brother was out doing his regular Sunday afternoon chores, which happened to be burning off a bunch of things. And if you've ever lived in the country, you know you don't have trash pickup or garbage pickup or city conveniences. So you burn off trash. You also burn the garden, the grass in the garden, so for the new growth before you do any planting. And that's what his job was. He was doing his job, and I was out there watching him. I sat down on the ground near him that had already been blackened, but the wind was blowing, and a cinder hit my petticoat, and that was before treated clothing. So I went up just went up and took off running through about 22 acres of farmland. Long story short, I burned over 65% of my body, third degree. The rest of it was first and second degree burns. If you see me today and if you look at me now, most people never know this, never know that I've been burned. And I had a series of about 38 skin grafts. I went under general anesthesia 42 times in my life, but I spent 4 years in a hospital. I had to learn to walk all over again. My body constricted and contracted, and there's just many, many things that came out of this. But as a result, I will tell you what I learned. Initially, during the burns, my mother put me out. She burned her hands severely doing so. We lived I like the old redneck joke, you know, 12 miles to the paved road, you know, back in the country. So it was way back in the country. We moved back then. We had a nine-party party line on the telephone, our telephone line. And so my mother, once she got me put out, she rolled me in the dirt. But one of my last memories of seeing my brother, because I was out there with my older brother, he was 10 and I was 5. And the last thing I remember was him leaning against an oak tree and hiding his face. And every once in a while he would peek out to see if I was still going, because he had tried to put me out and couldn't. But my mother finally put me out, rolled me in the dirt, and but she was burned severely. They got me to the hospital, and once I got into the emergency room, the good news is that after you burn so deeply, you don't feel anything anymore because your nerves are now been burned off. So I'm laying there, and I remembered being in excruciating pain and screaming. And then all of a sudden, I'm laying on this table, and the light, you know, they have a big surgical type of light overhead, and people are running all around the room. They're just panicking and doing everything they can for me. And I shut my eyes for just an instant, and when I open them again, the light is just extremely bright now. I mean, extremely bright. And the people now that are standing over me, the nurses and the doctors, who I think are nurses and doctors still, are now in silhouette because the light behind them is so bright. And I'm complaining, and I'm just fussing. I'm going, turn the light off, turn the light off. It's too bright. I can't see you. I can't see you. And then I remember telling them, I don't hurt anymore. I don't feel anything anymore. And I'm going, I don't hurt, but do something about the light. Do something about the light. And one female reaches over and touches me and says, it's okay, you'll get used to it. It's all right. And the longer, and as time went on, I mean, I'm laying there and I realize I don't hurt anymore. And then I'm trying to tell them, you don't have to rush around. I don't feel it anymore. I don't feel it. And as I did that, then the light does change, and I'm getting more and more accustomed to it. And I realize the people standing over me, I know them very well, but I don't know them. They're strangers to me, but yet there's something about them that I know. And I knew that they were male and female, but now I realize there's something telling me these are not doctors and nurses any longer. They look like normal people, but they're not doctors and nurses. And so I start questioning them. I'm going, where am I? What's going on? Who are you? And I'm in the same place, but yet I'm not in the same place. And as I'm talking to them and looking at them, I realize I'm the only one using my voice. I'm the only one using my mouth. I'm hearing them in their voice, but they're not using their mouth. I'm the only one talking. And so then I start to realize that they're hearing everything I'm saying, and they're answering me before I even ask the question. And before I even form the question in my head, I have the answer. I realize, now I'm 5 years old. You've got to understand this. And this knowledge is coming to me. It's like a knowing that you have. I can't explain it. But I'm going, oh, my goodness, you know, then it becomes a game. I decide, well, okay, I'm not going to use my voice anymore. I'm just going to think it and see what I get. And when I do, I get the answer. And then before I can even think of another question, I'm getting excited now. I'm going, okay, what can I ask now? You know, and as I do that, I get the answer before I even ask the question. I realize immediately I'm very connected to everybody in the room. I am known by them, and I know them, though I couldn't tell you one of them's name right now, but I know that I know them better than I know my own family here on earth. I know that I know these people. And I'm aware, and I go, where am I, and what's going on? Because I have been all, and I tell them, I've been all burned up. I'm all burned up. And the female presence tells me, you know what happens to baby animals in the wintertime? And I said, uh-huh. And she said, what is that? And I said, they hibernate. And I knew about hibernation. I grew up in the country, you know, and I knew, you know, that animals hibernate. And she says, Well, that's what you're doing. She said, we're going to pretend you're a baby animal. What animal would you like to be? And we're going to pretend that you're hibernating, and it's time for you to rest now. Now, I'm 5 years old, and this was before near death was ever talked about. It was not even a coined phrase. This was before I knew anything about any kind of such of experience. But I knew I was somewhere else. I was still very much alive. I was still very much aware of everything in the room. And the room still looked the same as it did. The emergency room still looked like the emergency room. But now I realize these people are also giving off light. And the best way I could explain it is a child was like a fluorescent light bulb, like they were their own light source.
Right.
And I'm talking to them, and they're talking to me. I know them intimately. I'm connected to these people intimately, but I couldn't tell you, again, any of them's name. And I know that they're part of my family. And they spoke to me in terms that only a 5-year-old could understand. They told me I was hibernating like a little baby animal and let me pick out what animal I wanted to be. And so that was my first experience. The one thing I learned immediately that happens to you is, and if you have anybody right now that's going through a very trying time, if they're facing life-threatening issues, if they're in a coma, if you know anybody, I hope that you will tell them what I'm about to share with you. The first thing that I realized was that, and the first thing I felt was this envelopment of purest, purest love. It is total acceptance, total, complete, unconditional love that is just, it permeates everything. I mean, absolutely everything. It's just all around you. It's like someone or something just has their arms totally encased, you encased in them. You are protected. You are just everything about you is accepted and tolerated. I mean, and I never felt any judgment. That was the first thing that I lesson I learned there was that there is no such thing as judgment. You judge yourself. You may judge others, and you judge yourself, but you are not judged. And I met Daniel Brinkley one time, and I love him and his books. And he shook my hand, and I told him, I said, you know, I feel kind of cheated. I never went through the tunnel. Everybody talks about the tunnel experience. I said, I just went straight to light. And I said, I never understood that because I know that a lot of people go through a tunnel. Not that I'm looking forward to that, but... And then I realized the reason I did go right to the light is I think it was because of my age. I was 5. I mean, I didn't have a lot of life experience yet. And I think I was still in that age of innocence, you know, that, and so I believe children do go directly to light, just directly there. And, I didn't go through a tunnel. I just went straight to that light each time. Each time the light gets softer. And the best way I can put it is, like, my favorite time of day is after the sun sets, and you've got that pink and beautiful golden glow to an indirect light. It's in between times. It's not day and it's not night, but it's this wonderful softness of light. You get that again at dawn.
Right.
And I love that light. I've sought that light throughout my life. At night, I have to be outside when the sun goes down. I mean, I just feel that pull to be outside. And it's because I'm trying to recreate that light. That's the closest thing to it. So you do get accustomed to the light. Colors there. It's much the in-between stage that I was at, and I've had multiple experiences because I did go through so many surgeries. And because of the surgeries, I would go into cardiac arrest. So and a lot of that had to do with my blood volumes and had to do with the anesthesia they were giving me at the time, which happened to be ether was the drug of choice in that day for anesthesia. We've come a long way since then. But I think that was part of the experience. And I would go into cardiac arrest. And the first time I did, I was actually pronounced. And they had actually called me, so to speak. I was out for about I was flatlined for 3.5 minutes back then. That was a long time. And my doctor, I believe there's no such thing as accidents. I believe there's no such thing as luck or chance. I believe there's no randomness. I believe that everything happens for a reason. I don't believe in coincidence. I believe in divine timing. I believe in divine intervention. I believe in destiny. But I do believe that my physician at the time was just a general practitioner, old country doctor. He had never done an arterial cut down. He'd only read about them. I'm in the hospital. I had just flatlined, and the nurse came out to tell my mother. My father was in the oil field. He was in the oil business. He had just gotten the news through a two-way radio and was on his way to the hospital, which took him several hours to get there. And by the time he got there, they had just pronounced me, and he said, "Well, I've got to see her." And they did not want him to come into the emergency room because there was not much to me. I mean, when you're burned, I had no skin at all. I mean, no skin anywhere on my body. I had burned, my hair had even burned up to my ears. I had 3 inches of cloth. I had a sleeveless dress on, so all that was left of my clothing was just the sleeves over the top of, draped over the top of my shoulders. And I remember seeing the nurses take those 3 inches of cloth and lay it down, and all I could think of was, that was my favorite dress. As a kid, that was my favorite dress. But, I mean, that's how severely, how much I had burned. And they didn't want him to see me, that to be his last memory of me. But he did go through the double doors, and just as he did, he saw the doctor cut my ankle and pull out what he described as a piece of, looked like cooked spaghetti, which happened to be the vein, I guess, in my leg, because my veins had collapsed. I had no blood flow. I was just, you know, my heart had stopped. So the doctor put a needle in it, and it was just about a minute later, a blip came on the screen, and they rushed my father back out. But so that's just one experience.
How many times have you had near-death experience?
During surgeries, probably about 4 that I had throughout those 4 years. Each time got a little stronger and stronger, and I stayed a little longer. When I go into surgery today, even when I had my children, which I had by C-section, the first thing I say in the recovery room when I wake up is, how long have I been gone? Because I never know. When I went in when I was first burned on March 19th, I did not wake up until April 19th, which happens to be my birthday. That was my 6th birthday, and I awoke on that day out of my first coma. So I've had multiple near deaths since then. And then I also grew up learning about this and knowing that I could detach, because when you're severely burned, you're debrided every day, sometimes twice a day, which means they set you in water and soak bandages off of you, and then they come in and they scrape what skin you have grown or what scabs or whatever you have, they scrape you and just knock, and which for a child, that's hard to understand because you're trying to grow skin and you think, oh, if I just let, you know, when you get an injury, you think, oh, let it scab over and it'll heal, you know. But that's not what happens when you're burned. They come in and remove that skin every day and scrape it off of you. So, you know, it was a very confusing time for me because I didn't understand why they were doing this when I thought they wanted me to heal and it looked like they were just tearing me apart every day. And this went on for like 4 years. So I've had multiple near deaths since then, but because they would give me so much anesthesia, it would ultimately cause me to go into arrest again. You build up a tolerance to pain medications. You build up a tolerance to anesthesia and antibiotics. You build up a lot of tolerances because you're having to be so heavily sedated and heavily, you know, medicated for a number of reasons. Infection runs rampant throughout your body. A lot of people don't realize that your skin is the largest vital organ you have.
Right.
It's very important. So everything that went in my body came right back out because you don't have skin to hold it in. So I think I received 8 units of blood the first night. Of course, that just came right back out. And then, you know, you just go through, I went through all kinds of different stages where they end up, you have to lay under a tent with no clothing. They come in every 2 hours and flip you and turn you, not only because for a lot of different reasons, circulation and so your lungs, not to get pneumonia and everything, but also because I would stick the sheets.
Right.
My body would stick to the sheets because, you know, I have no skin. So, you know, naturally I'm going to just stick to anything. So this went on. I mean, you know, this happens every day. So I learned also, I said all of that to let you know that you learn how to detach and pull away and kind of step outside of the pain and go to another place. It becomes a mind over matter thing. So I learned that very early on. And I'm so grateful to Dr. Kubler-Ross and to Brian Weiss and to D.L. Moody and people like that, because nobody knew what near death was at that point. Nobody knew what to call it. I grew up thinking everybody had these experiences. I grew up thinking that it was just a part of life.
Right.
You know, I didn't talk about it a whole lot because I just thought it was natural. I just thought it was normal. So, but I will tell you this, when you're on that, in that in-between stage, when you're there, colors are more brilliant. Everything is so beautiful. It's so wonderful. And the love that you feel. One thing I did learn through all of those experiences and as I've grown is that, again, you are not judged. You judge yourself, maybe, and you judge yourself too harshly. But everything is about lessons. This is truly a classroom, and we choose to come here for our growth and development and to have this experience. I grew up going to Sunday school and church in a Protestant home, and I was always taught that I was a body with a soul. But I'm telling you, you're an eternal being with a body. It's just the opposite. The emphasis should be put on the eternal part of you that is there. You existed before. You will exist long after this. This is just an experience you're having at the moment in this personality that you know, Jen, is Peggy, and that I know is Jen.
Right.
So, but the true essence and your true being is just housed in this clothing right now. You just like to come here and play. And we truly are here to learn. It's all about lessons, and it's all about free will and the choices that you make. There is no right. There is no wrong. It is about your journey. It's about your lessons and what you choose to come here to learn. And you chose to come here in this body, at this time, at this place, at this culture, at this part of the world, with the parents that you have. I believe, and I know, this is my truth now, this is what I know, that I travel in soul groups and with a soul family, that I came here with a guideline of the things that I wish to accomplish and the lessons that I wish to learn. And other people in my circle volunteered to come here to help me, to come along into my life at certain points. And maybe things have been set up a certain way. Nothing's written in stone. Nothing's written in stone. Your free will is paramount. God himself, spirit, the universe will not override your free will or allow another to do so. You have set up certain lessons that you wish to learn. One thing that I learned completely through the whole burn experience is that it grounds you physically into the body. When you have a trauma or an injury of some sort and you have to be very much grounded into that physical realm to get to be healed and to get past whatever it is that you're going through. And that did ground me into the physical world, because I was always a dreamer and a mystic, I think. I became very proactive in learning, because they don't explain things to children in the hospitals. They used to not do that. So I became very aware early on about the physical body. I couldn't understand why they were scraping my skin off when I thought they wanted me to grow skin, you know.
Right.
And back then we didn't have the synthetics that we have now. We didn't have, I was my own donor. So I had to grow skin. And as soon as I grew skin, the first thing they wanted to do was chop it off and put it somewhere else. So I didn't understand that. I had so many grafts, and I've got grafts all over. I'm pieced together like a patchwork quilt. That's what I tell people.
Right. I mean, from this experience, though, did you keep in touch with those entities you saw when you first went into your coma, or did you just know they were there? I mean,
they're there. They're always there. They were healers. I believe they were healers. I do have one being that that has been with me throughout, and he is a very large male type of energy. I believe him to be an angel, but I call him guardian. He has come to me in times of trouble, in times of great distress, and he appears to me a lot in dreams. As a child growing up, dreams were very prominent, and prophetic dreams became very prominent. And as I grew, and I think a lot of times they appear to you in dreams first, and I'll tell this to anybody who has lost a loved one. If you're having dreams of that loved one that has passed, and they are so real and so vivid, that is what I call a visitation. They will appear to you in dreams first, because it's less frightening, and your subconscious mind will readily accept them, where your conscious mind will block them out and filter them out because you're afraid, or you think it's your imagination or whatever. But it is very much a real experience, and they are truly with you, and they are truly stopping by and just letting you know in a very subtle, less threatening way. I do have that particular, the guardian is with me always. I believe he is my master guide. I believe he is an angel of some sort. And I know there's a whole hierarchy of angels. I know him to be very powerful. And the interesting thing about this is that other people have seen him too. I was walking down the street in New Orleans one day, and someone came up to me on the street and started talking directly over my right shoulder, and I turned to see who was behind me, because I thought, I don't know this person. Oh, they're talking to the person behind me. And I turned around to look, and no one was there. And the person, the lady who came up to me, she said, "I'm sorry." She said, "You have a very large gentleman right to your right side, and he told me immediately, watch what you say to her." And this was in New Orleans. A week later, my job took me out to San Diego, and I'm sitting at the Four Point Sheraton, and I walk in, and this gentleman is sitting there, and he goes, "Ma'am," he says, "you know you've got this big fellow with following you?" And, you know, and this was, neither one of these people were necessarily a psychic or anything of that nature. They were just like, you know, "by the way, do you know there's somebody big following you and on your right side?" So I know other people have seen it, and that's just, and I think Spirit did that just to validate that for me, right? You know, that, you know, these experiences you've grown up with all your life, these are very real, and other people are just total strangers. You know, when total strangers do that in completely, you know, total different states, miles apart from each other, you know there's something to it, you know. So I said all of that to say this, that the one thing that I do understand when you go there is that you're immediately accepted, you're immediately loved, you feel that love, and if you're ever in between that stage and in that place, I knew that at any moment I wanted to come, if I wanted to stay there, I would. So I knew that everything there travels at the speed of thought. It is like faster than thought. And you are known, and everything about you is known, and everything that you're about to say is known. All the information is right there. It's given to you. And it's the most wonderful experience. But I knew, and I would remember telling them, you know, "I got to go back now. My mother's calling me. I got to go back." And one particular near death, I used to climb trees as a kid. I loved climbing trees. And mimosa tree is a tree in the south, and it's very easy to climb. And because of my bandages and my burns, you know, that was my favorite tree to climb because they grow low branches to the ground. So one of my near deaths was, there's this beautiful mimosa tree, and there's all these children sitting on these different branches, and they're all my age. And I know each and every one of these children there. I do not know them in this life. But all of these kids there were like my very best friend. And I went up to the tree, and they're beckoning me. They're going, Peggy, come on, come up here, come here, sit by me, sit by me. So I'd climb up on one branch, and I would sit with one of them. And they were all dressed in white for some reason. I don't know why they were all in white, but they were in these white gowns. And I would sit with one here, and then the one above, on the branch above, would beckon me to come up higher. Come up a little here. Come up here now. It's my turn. You got to come sit with me a little bit. So I'd climb up to the next branch, and I'd sit with them, and we'd talk and play and gabber. And then the next one, and I kept climbing up this tree, and it just seemed like it just went straight up into the clouds, and they kept calling me and calling me, and I'd go up to and sit with them. Oh, come on, Peggy, it's my turn now. Come up and sit with me here. And I got to a certain point, and I went, wait a minute. This is as high as I'm going, you know. And I remember going, okay, you know, and I sat there for a little while, and I said, you know what? I said, it's time for me to go back. I got to go down. I got to go back. I was meant to play in the sunshine. I said, I got to go. My mother's calling me. I got to go. And I'd wake up. And I'd usually wake up in the recovery room. And I don't care what anybody says. I'm in the medical field. I've always been in the medical field. But I don't care what anybody says. It's not oxygen deprivation. I was somewhere else. It was just as real as what is sitting right in front of me now. The people are just as real. And as I said, the one thing that I would want to get to someone to take away with them is this. This is a classroom. We come here to grow. It's all for our soul's development. I learned so much about compassion through this whole experience. I learned patience. I learned a deeper connection with spirit and with God. I learned, too, that about... Because I was being indoctrinated through my religious background, that, you know, you're going to be judged on the other side. And I'm going, no, you're not going to be judged on the other side. That's not what's going to happen. It's all about choices. There are multiple outcomes to everything that you do, and every choice that you make. It's like when you go into a door opens and you step inside a room. There are other doors leading out of that room. Doors close behind you, new doors open. You have to ask yourself, okay, if I choose this, can I live with the consequences that go with that choice? And make the most compassionate choice you can for yourself and the highest good of all others. And it's all about the choices we make. And the decisions that we make. And some of us make hard choices. I mean, and some of those choices and those consequences are painful. But we learn lessons that are not to be repeated. And if you don't learn the lesson, you're going to repeat it. It's like school. This is like a schoolyard. You don't pass to the next grade until you get the lesson.
Right.
So that is the one, that's the other thing that I learned that, hopefully you take the best out of that situation and go forward. Many times, I mean, if you look at me today, I achieved my dream. What happened was when you're burned, your body constricts and contracts. And I went for a long time living in a wheelchair, and my right side of my body pulled and drew. I could not put my right foot down on the ground. I couldn't straighten my right leg. And so... They decided to give me, we didn't have physical therapy in the hospital that I was in. They decided to give me dance lessons. So they would check me out of the hospital every day and send me to a dance class. And I would, you know, get furloughs to go home, but I was constantly going in and out of the hospital back to have surgeries. And I would go to dance class, and objective was to get me to stretch,
right.
Because I was just absolutely just twisted and contorted, and that worked. My good old country doctor was a genius when he came up with this idea, because I went on to, when I was a child, 8 years old, you'd ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up. I knew what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a choreographer. Now, most kids didn't even know what that was. And I did grow up to be a choreographer. I became a dancer, and I taught dance. I had my own dance studio, and I was a gymnast. I did all manner of things. I mean, I've gained total use of my body. I have parts of my body that just have just skin and no muscle over it, behind on my right leg, especially behind my knee. But there's many wonderful stories that came out of this whole situation, and I probably would have learned to dance anyway, but I don't think I would have danced with the same spirit, with the same gift of knowing what movement and being in this body and is like, and knowing the thrill and the joy that I knew being able to regain the use of my body. I don't think I would have danced the same dance, so to speak. So there's many wonderful, wonderful things. Like I said, I don't believe in accidents. Well, you know, why did God let this happen to you? And, well, God didn't let it happen to me. It just happened, you know. And it's not the things that happen to us in life. It's what happens through us as a result of the things that happen to us in life and the fruit that that bears. There's just many wonderful stories that came from that, and I can tell you just over and over again that if you're facing the loss of someone or you're facing a situation in your own life and you don't know what that future is or you don't know what's beyond the veil, I'm here to tell you, if you ever have the chance to see what I've seen and feel what I've felt, and you're given the choice, I don't think you're going to turn around and come back.
No.
You know? It is the most wonderful experience, and it's the most wonderful thing I can tell you. I mean, to know that kind of love, to know the connectedness and the oneness that we all share, and to know that and just have I just had a glimpse. It was like I was standing in the doorway. I just had a glimpse. And I know a lot of people go through a lot of traumatic events in their life. They face death all the time, but they never have such an experience as I had. Why did it happen to me and not someone else? Why does someone else have a cardiac arrest and they don't remember anything about it and they didn't go to another place? I can't answer that question. I just know that everybody that I have ever come in contact with that had near-death experiences were changed profoundly by them. And their biggest message that they can give is to give others hope. And that is the greatest gift I can give you, is hope. And the knowledge that you are loved, that you are accepted, that it is all about the choices that you make, that you are not judged, that it is something to look forward to make the best, most compassionate decisions in your life with the best information you can. And do so with the highest good of all involved, and be compassionate with yourself. Cut yourself some slack, you know. That's the most important thing I can tell people. And don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, because this is not all there is. There is so much more. Just because you can't see it, hear it, doesn't mean it's any less real.
Right. Well, Peggy, let's go ahead and open up the phone line, and I'm going to give the phone, because you give wonderful insights for individuals. I've had many readings from you, and it's just always been very confirming, reaffirming, and just very good information. So I do want to give out those numbers now, and it's 877-876-5227 in the U.S., and if you're in Canada, it is 888-815-9756, and if you'd like to ask Peggy a question about anything, she is really a wonderful intuitive to answer your questions on many areas, as well as if you have any questions about if you have a loved one who is going through a traumatic time or is, you know, dealing with an illness and you want to help them out, please give us a call. Peggy is wonderful and giving you some insight about your personal situation as well. But I also want to say, Peggy, if somebody does want to have a reading more intimate, like one-on-one, how can they get in touch with you? What is the best way?
There's two ways. The best way is just to email me. Then I'll give you my personal email address. It is all lowercase, sweetspirit, one word, Sweet Spirit, _ Peg, P-E-G, at yahoo.com. Or you can contact me through my website there at www.keen.com/sweet spirit. Either way.
Wonderful. So, you started to... Oh, we got a caller.
Hi, this is Christina in Arizona.
How are you doing today?
Very, very good. This call is amazing.
Thank you, Christina. Good to hear from you. And I had prayed about this beforehand, and I knew that just the right people would be guided and would get through, and I'm just so grateful that you're here.
Well, you know, last week, it's like the phone was so busy, and I said, I am not waiting. So it'll be busy, but I won't take too much time. I am a Christian, but I'm very spiritual. When you shared that the children go directly to the light and they're very conscious, were you were completely dead?
I was pronounced, yes. And back then, I think there was probably a different criteria than they have now. But yes, they had already come out and told my parents I was gone.
Oh,
yes. Now, I was only, I've investigated this since this time, and I've questioned my doctors and everything, and I remember asking, and the first time it was for 3.5 minutes, and then it became 2.5 minutes, and but I was in such sad shape that they didn't know they were going to get me back. In fact, I come from a hometown, my hometown has a large Air Force base in it, and they had offered to fly me to Galveston, Texas, to the burn center down there, and the doctor said, oh, there's no need to do that. She won't make it through the night, you know. And I was burned over 65% of my body's third degree. Even today, I know people with all of the advances in medicine since that time, even today, I know people who have burned 20% of their body, and they don't make it. So I am a walking, living miracle, and there is a reason I'm here, and I know that. I have a purpose. And if nothing, even if it's just to talk to you tonight, Christina, this is my purpose. So,
in the I don't know if it's fundamental. It's the Seventh-day Adventists don't believe that we can communicate after we die, that we are asleep. And then, of course, then we know that people who die are able to communicate because obviously it's going on. Were you able to hear and see?
Oh, very much so. Yes, very much so. It's far more vivid than it is here. I think, to me, Earth is like a facsimile in a way of, but the colors are like the greeners are greener there. There's waterfalls, there's flowers. It's whatever is important to you and what means something to you, and I tell people this all the time. My favorite flower is gardenia,
and
I love. You know how you have one gardenia blossom outside of your house with the windows open; it fills your whole house. And I tell people all the time, this is what heaven smells like, and it's true because when I could smell it, and I could it just permeated everything because it's my favorite flower, and they were everywhere. So it is what you expect. If you expect that this is all there is and you're going to sleep and it's going to be black, then you're liable to sleep, you know. I don't know. I just know that this is my experience, and I can't speak for other people. I just only speak for my experience. And I know that I will tell you this, you know, having grown up this way and understood all of this and understand that there's no such thing as death and that there is no such thing as death, everything exist in one form or another. Everything that ever existed is here in one form or another. If I take a piece of paper and set fire to it, the elements of that paper is still in this room. It's just changed form, which is what we do. We just go back to our pure selves. I'm just wearing the clothing that people see that they call Peggy. And it is my body. I'm just inhabiting this body. I incarnated into this body. So,
go ahead.
I'm sorry.
On April 25th of 2004, I actually had a hologram. That's the only way I know how to explain it. A hologram experience. When you were talking about, you could see everything, nothing changed, but you knew that it was different. That actually took me back to that afternoon. It was a Sunday afternoon around 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, my time. I was out in my dad's driveway, and what happened, and he lives on a very busy road, always, I mean, traffic's 24/7. I was out on the driveway, and it was like the colors didn't intensify. They went kind of like a almost monochromatic, except you could tell green was green. But pretty much everything was different shades of gray and different shades of white and different shades of black. But I could see the trees were green. I could see the concrete was gray.
Like looking through a curtain.
But there was no wind.
Yeah.
There was no oxygen. There were no birds. And there was no traffic. And I saw my dad's house. I saw everything.
Mm.
And I was going, how can I be breathing when there's no wind? And how come I'm not suffocating? Because there's no air. And why am I here?
Mm.
And the minute I answered that, everything went back and there was traffic and noise and wind.
Oh, but what a great gateway. What a great opening. And I think you're going to have more of these experiences. And don't be afraid of them. I know that probably took you off guard and really, you know, took you by surprise. But I think what you experienced is like an out-of-body. Excuse me.
Well,
and I think you're going to have more.
I think it was my brother who killed himself that day. In fact,
whoa,
was dying at that moment, and I didn't know it. I think it was my brother showing me.
Yes. I'm so sorry to hear of your loss.
I'm sorry he did it too, because I would love to kick his butt. But he, you know, I went home totally, what happened? And then I went home and I actually fell asleep into a very deep coma sleep in the afternoon. I mean, I was just, boom, exhausted. And then it was 7 o'clock at night, and my daughter knocked on the door and said that Uncle Rodney is dead.
And oh, my.
Then, you know, when I got up, I found out that at that time, it was during that time that he had committed suicide.
Oh.
And not only had he committed suicide, I was in the driveway of the house. He was in that house. I was there. I always wonder if I could have stopped him. Had I known he was there.
That's hard for me to say. And I mean, we always second guess ourselves when something like that happens.
One who showed that to me?
Yeah. I think that you were given a glimpse, and I think that was his passing through. And don't be surprised if you start seeing or having messages from him. You'll start, and it may start with dreams first.
Uh-huh.
I believe that he will come to you in your dreams. They will be very vivid, very real. And it will just be that he's visiting. It will be just like a normal thing. And I believe, I too have a Christian background. And, you know, but as I know this to be true, that there is nothing unforgivable. So, and though your brother did take his life, please know that he is in a good place. He's having to deal with that over there because he shortened his life here and the lessons that he came here to learn.
Does he have to deal with it over there because he chooses to?
No, he will. Let me tell you what I learned. We will experience the emotions that we inflicted or caused others to experience because of our actions.
Yeah.
We will deal with that. you will go through a sort of like a review of your life. Mm-hmm. You will see incidences that you weren't even aware of, consciously aware of, where you hurt other people's feelings.
Cause and effect. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You are going to, so you will, in other words, you're not judged, but you will, that's why I say you kind of judge yourself. You will experience the emotions that your actions cause them to feel.
Which is why
that's what he's dealing with.
And in this dimension, that Christian principle of going and making atonement and peace and giving restitution it's good to do it now. So you
right.
have to deal with it when you cross over.
Right. Because, yeah, it's important that you appreciate, and I've heard John Edwards say this a lot, appreciate and validate the people in your life today. I think that's such profound wisdom, and there's a reason for that, so that you don't have to do that. But you come here to learn lessons, and your life, when it's like, I have to quote him because I just think he's wonderful. I think he has a lot of credibility. I do really appreciate him and what he said, and I heard him say just last night, I was watching a program, and I heard him say, it's like you go to graduation, but if you didn't go through the class, they're not going to you just show up at the commencement exercise. They're not going to just hand you a diploma, you know, and say, oh, well, because you showed up anyway, here you go. Here's your diploma. No, you're going to learn the lesson. And when suicide takes the life, when you take your life by suicide, you didn't learn those lessons. And they're going to go, okay, well, you know what? Guess what? You're going to go back and you're going to deal with this again. You know, you're going to go, you've got to learn, you chose this lesson and this is the lesson that you skipped out on. You kind of skipped class. So you got to go back to class. You know, so, and I do believe, now see that conflicted with my Christian, what I was being taught. You know, we come here once and you only go around once and then
right.
the judgment, you know. Well, that conflicted with what I knew and what I was experiencing as a child and had experienced all my life. And I would sit in church just shaking my head going, oh, y'all got it all wrong. You got it.
Out of the mouth of babes.
You know, but, and like I said, I had to let God out of the box. You know, a little bit.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I take what resonates with my soul and what I know to be true and what serves me. But I don't push it down anybody else's throat. It's my belief, and I allow them to believe what they believe. And a lot of times I like to hear what other people think, because I go, wow, you know, that is spiritual truth. Spiritual truth is spiritual truth. It's going to resonate. The same thread runs through every denomination, every religion. I don't care whether you're Muslim, whether you're Christian, whether you're Jewish, whether you're a Buddhist. There is spiritual law and spiritual truth that resonate the same thread. We all go back to the same source. There are many paths to God. I just happen to have a Christian path. That is my point of contact. But we all go back to the same source. Everything leads to the same place. And I think, you know, my God is known by many names, and he answers to every one of them, you know. So, I understand that. And I had to let God out of the box, and I had to realize that, you know, hey, it's okay to believe this and know this, and bless their hearts, they're going to get it one day. You know, it doesn't take a traumatic event like I had to do that. You know, just seek and ask questions. And I think God, Spirit, Universe, whatever you want to label that, mm-hmm. I believe that God loves a curious mind. He wants you to test him. He wants you to prove, to ask him questions. He doesn't want a bunch of robots. That's why he gave us free will. That's why he gave us freedom of choice. He wants us to decide and to learn the lesson and to make the best informed choice that we possibly can. But going back to the loss of your brother, I too lost someone that I cared very deeply for, and having grown up knowing all about this and not believing in death and knowing it's just a transitional phase, that I wasn't prepared for grief. Yeah. Grief threw me for a loop. Mm-hmm. I didn't know grief. I still have my parents. I'm blessed that way. I still, I never had lost anybody really close to me. And I lost somebody that I loved very much. And it was took me totally by surprise, totally out of the blue. And I felt like God had pulled the rug out from under me, and I couldn't understand it for the longest time. And I was not prepared for that journey of grief. But I do believe now that all things happen for a reason. There are no accidents. Everything happens for a reason. There is a plan and a purpose. I believe that this person that I lost was one of the greatest teachers I ever had. And I believe that his death also was one of the greatest lessons that I learned. And had I not gone through the stages of grief and agonized that full year that I really didn't know whether I was going to make it through it or not, and knowing that, and begging for him to leave me a sign, show up, talk to me, come to me. You know, I went to see John Edward a couple times. I went to everybody I could to just hear a word. And I did finally hear a word, but it was never through the way I expected to hear it. It was never I could have saved a whole lot of money if I'd. But
yeah, really.
But I was not prepared for the stages of grief, and if I had not gone through that, I would not be able to minister to people now and tell them. It just kind of dovetails into my story about the near-death experiences, and knowing now with compassion what grief is and how it paralyzes you.
Well, and even I think a spiritual level. Because you are so soul connected with that person that leaves.
Oh, and you miss their physical presence.
God,
I can't tell you how many times I pick up the phone and dial the phone just to hear the recording of his voice.
I love
and
that.
knowing that sooner or later that was going away. I wouldn't even have that. You know, I can't tell you. I climbed a mountain every day. I was living in Denver, and I climbed the mountain every day. And there were days I didn't know how I was coming back down off that mountain, or if I would come down at all. I mean, I really, I wasn't prepared for grief. I was prepared to tell people my story, and oh, it's wonderful over there, and you know, no, you know, well, that's all well and good. But when you lose someone. And you lose someone that you truly love, that's a different story when that physical presence is ripped from you and you think of all the things, all the wasted moments, all the you know, it's a journey that I wasn't prepared for. And,
right.
But now I'm so grateful for it, and I'm grateful that he taught me that. And I do know that he is around and he's aware of what's going on in my life and very happy for me. I just became engaged to be married. And I know that in a strange way that he has led me to this person and has blessed me.
I was just going to tell you, he selected this person for you.
Yes.
That's interesting. I actually, when my friends die, they usually visit me. And I know before I get the phone call.
Wonderful.
But way before I ever met Jennifer, and, you know, it was very odd to me, and I would not talk about it because it was, I thought, my own personal schizophrenia.
Well, and we do, don't we question ourselves? I mean, and this, you know, and that's the sad part about all of this is that we grow up, we're born into this world, and we inherit our parents' religion normally. We inherit our, you know, culture by the virtue of where we're born, the region of the country we're born in or the world that we're born in, politics. I mean, we just grow up into this environment, you know, where we're kind of domesticated, you know, and until we... And we filter out all of our spiritual side, and then because we're taught, oh, you know, you can't believe that, you know, that's of the devil, or this is that, or that, you know. But I say this, judge a tree by its fruit, truly look at the fruit that it produces in the life of the person, and what is coming out of that, and that's what you need to go by.
And I need to clear myself on this call. I've never been diagnosed with schizophrenia.
I wouldn't.
My secret self-doubt diagnosis of what am I?
I have a little sign in my office. I run an office here, and I have about 20 people that I supervise, and I have a sign on my desk that says, "You're just jealous because the voices are talking to me now."
Well, I do remember asking God that I said I'm a truth seeker, and I desire to know truth, and this opened up the floodgates of what I guess people call it law of attraction. It opened up doors to where I am now, you know, communicating
yes.
with you, and Jen is my friend. And in that journey, I am in gratitude that you are in my life. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, and God bless you, and I will keep you in my thoughts and prayers, and thank you so much for calling
yeah.
and sharing your life with us tonight.
All right, I am going to hang up now.
God bless you.
Actually, believe it or not, the hour is up. It was.
Oh, my goodness, you're kidding.
No, it is actually time to say thank you very much, Peggy. I don't want to keep you because I know you have a busy day tomorrow, and it's... really late
it is,
you are.
Yeah, it's about 1 a.m. on the East Coast.
I want to thank Peggy for being on the show. Obviously, you have to come back because we didn't even get touched on the magic and the other wonderful things that you can talk about. So I thank you very much for being on the show. And I want to mention that next week I will have John Silver. I know on the schedule it says the wonderful Scottish women are going to be on. They will be on. That is a pre-recorded show, and they will be on Thanksgiving. So next week we have a bonus show, in a way, with Dawn Silver, and she will be talking to us about the healing energies of crystals. She is the author of the Jewel of the Lotus Gemstone Oracle Cards. She will be doing readings, and she is wonderful. I also would like to invite the audience, once again, to send in their questions. If they have any questions about connecting with the animal spirits or with nature, I will be interviewing Ted Andrews, who wrote Animal Speaks and many, many other wonderful books about connecting with nature on December 6th. So it is also a pre-recorded show, so please send in your questions to Jen at JenniferHillman.com. And if you could put Animal or Ted Andrews in the subject, so I know it is a question, I want to make sure to get those answered for you. So until next time, this is Jennifer Hillman, hoping that with each breath of air, you gained new insights and inspiration. Many blessings to you. Have a great week. Good night.